Good afternoon, everybody. Today is Wednesday, September 24th, so I believe that is 3 days in a row for me, so I'd like a little attaboy. Today, I wanted to talk about cultivating your algorithm, and in light of a lot of, you know, what's going on in the world. Jimmy Kimmel went back to, ABC brought his show back, I guess, last night. And I watched both. So I watched I don't normally watch Jimmy Kimmel. In fact, I stopped watching all late night shows back in, right around the time, you know, Trump started running for president the first time around, just because it got so negative so quickly. And I just didn't like, the shows used to be funny. You know, and I was always a Tonight Show, you know, I love Johnny Carson. Then that was the best. That was by far, it was just entertaining. It was a way to watch, kind of wind down, right? You didn't have to do any heavy lifting. You got the stand-up routine. You got him bantering with, oh God, what's his name? His sidekick. Oh, that's going to bother me. It'll come to me anyway. And then, you know, two or three guests, musical performance, that sort of thing. And you didn't even have to watch the whole thing. And usually I didn't, I had to work in the morning. So I didn't usually stay up, you know, much past 10:30. I still don't. And then Jay Leno took it over and he did a great job. I watched, you know, most of the time during Jay Leno. I was never a Letterman fan. I remember watching it once or twice, you know, all of my roommate watched it. Everybody in my generation thought it was just a great show. I always thought it was kind of mean and it just wasn't my style. So I was never a Letterman fan, even though it was considered edgy and cool and all of that. I was never edgy or cool, so it just didn't suit me. I was more, you know, Johnny Carson, Jay Leno style. So anyway, when Jimmy Fallon took it over, I watched and I liked Jimmy Fallon. It was, you know, milk toast, white bread and mayonnaise. It was pretty bland. And that's kind of what I wanted right before going to bed. I didn't want to get upset. I didn't want to be outraged or anything like that. And then slowly these shows kind of turned into that. It was all, you know, let's pick on Trump. Let's, and I don't mind if, you know, Trump certainly gives people a lot of material to pick on him with, right? And I think he actually enjoys it, if I'm not mistaken. I think he gets a kick out of having himself in the news. Any sort of attention is good attention as far as Trump is concerned, I think. But then after that, it wasn't enough to just rip on Trump. You had to rip on people who voted for Trump. And that's when I really stopped watching any of these shows, because I don't want to watch a show that, you know, spends most of its time telling me they don't like me. So I wasn't familiar with what Jimmy Kimmel said until today. I watched the clip today, and then I watched his return also. So in the original clip, he made some comment that the person who killed or who assassinated Charlie Kirk was on the right. So he was, and that the people on the right were doing everything they can to say that he was on the left. And from what I have learned since he said that, is that even when he said that, when he taped it, we knew that this kid had been radicalized on the left. But aside from that, it's just to joke about it was pretty, I think, low. He also included a response by Trump, which I couldn't tell if it was like faked or if it was real, but it was basically somebody asking him about the assassination, and Trump talked about building in the garden at the White House. And so when I first saw it, I wasn't sure if it was something that Kimmel and his team had kind of crafted together to make it look bad, or if that's really what it was. I think it really, that that's really what it was, from what I've gathered, which is pretty, you know, again, context is everything, right? The helicopter's going and it's loud, and I don't even know if Trump heard the question, or, you know, he was, you know, his mind was somewhere else. I don't, you know, I think Trump was very close to Charlie Kirk, so I can't imagine him trying to skip over the question. I'm sure he's got feelings about the whole thing and whether or not they've been articulated properly. I think to joke about that was kind of, you know, unnecessary. That said, I don't think Jimmy Kimmel should have been canceled for that. And that's the other thing. So they're saying that his affiliate or ABC's affiliates put the pressure on ABC to pull the show, and that, you know, the affiliates were basically flyover country. So, you know, the middle of the country, rural areas, that they didn't want to see Jimmy Kimmel. So they pulled the show for a week, and everybody got upset and started calling ABC, I guess, and Disney, and then they put him back on. And then, so last night was the first night back, and Jimmy Kimmel had he talked about, I don't know if it was an apology, but it was an explanation, I guess, and it seemed heartfelt. I will give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he was trying to be hurtful, certainly not towards the Kirk family and all of that. I just think that the rhetoric has gotten to a point where we're not even aware of what we're saying. We just say outrageous things because we know it'll get a laugh, or we know it'll get a click, and we don't really think about the consequences from saying those things. And I think Jimmy Kimmel learned very quickly what the consequences are. He was, you know, suspended indefinitely, even though it was only for a week. The reality is, all of those shows, all the network late night shows, their ratings have plummeted since they started just, you know, dragging Trump every single night. And why wouldn't they? Half the country voted for him. More so, the majority of people voted for him. So you don't want to be lumped in as, or you don't want to watch something where they hate you. And so, that said, I think, and I got the impression that Jimmy Kimmel might have understood this by the end of his very long monologue, that maybe it's time we start paying attention to what we say online and everywhere. At least it sounded like that to me. And like I say, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I probably am not going to watch the show just because I haven't. I might check in, and certainly I'll see clips. That was the other thing. And this is, so the purpose of this podcast today is that we get to cultivate and curate our own algorithm. Like, we get to make our bubble. So if you interact with content that is angry or negative or mean-spirited, any of that, you're going to see more of it. And in return, you're going to feel more angry and more mean and more negative. That's just the way things are. You know, like attracts like. We've known this forever. There's probably some physics deal to it, but if you want, what's her name? Sister. Oh, gosh. You know, the famous, I'm having some serious senior moments here. Mother Teresa. I'm thinking Sister Judith, but that was my Spanish teacher in ninth grade. Anyway, Mother Teresa was the one, I think she was the one who said, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And that's the same, that's what we've got going on here. So you can endlessly scroll through your phone and get outraged and click on that and yell at whoever, you know, call them a libtard or a transphobe or whatever side you're on. You can call them the derogatory name, bigot, Nazi, all of those things. But all that's going to do is, one, you're not going to change anyone's mind because you called them a name. And you're just going to see more of that kind of content that raises your blood pressure. And it also makes it seem like that kind of content is much more prevalent in society than it really is. And if you notice and you go outside and you interact with people who you don't know their political leanings, you know, you're just, whether it's your banker or the person selling you your coffee or whatever, I guess those aren't the best examples, but, you know, if you going to the grocery store, whatever, places that you do, things that you do every day, interacting with these people, you don't know their political leanings, and you're polite with them, and they're polite with you because they don't know your political leanings. You're just two people interacting on a daily basis, and it's normal, and it's regular, and we forget about that because we do scroll, and we do interact with people who are not at their best. So I think it's time to be at our best. Just because you're behind a screen doesn't mean you shouldn't be responsible for the words that you choose and how you present yourself and also how other people interpret your words. I frequently on social media, on Twitter, which is where I spend most of my time, unfortunately, if I see one of these posts, I've taken the position of I'm going to ask questions. And so I will try to have somebody clarify what it is they're saying. So if it's something that's outrageous or an accusation about somebody, say Charlie Kirk or something, you know, say that the big thing is that, you know, he was a racist and a bigot and a homophobe and all those things. So I'll ask them, you know, can you share some evidence of this? And I'm not trying to be a jerk. And I'm not trying to do a gotcha. I'm trying to, one, see if there is evidence, because if there is, I would like to see it, because that would change my mind about him. And two, I think it's important to be curious. Frequently, people will tell me I'm being willfully obtuse just for a gotcha. You know, they don't trust that I'm really curious. And that's unfortunate too. It's hard to have a discussion with somebody when they don't trust what your position is. So, but more times than not, I've actually found that when I ask a question, when somebody comes in hot and I ask them to clarify, we end up finding out that we're actually kind of on the same page and that maybe we just misinterpreted what the original post was about or where somebody was coming from or something like that. So I've found that asking questions can often take the wind out of the sails of somebody who's really upset. And it frequently happens. So, and I've noticed also that if you end up in a thread or in a comment section where people are like piling on to somebody else, you can turn that around. You can literally ask a question, assuming that the original post was in good faith, and you can turn the whole narrative around, and people will stop being rude and impolite and name calling and all that. And they actually start to pay attention. Oh, maybe it really wasn't this way. So we have the power, even though the algorithms are designed to have us scrolling nonstop, we actually have the power to make the place a better place. We don't have to interact with the negativity. We don't have to interact with the name calling. We don't have to interact with people who are just looking for a fight. And I think a lot of the stuff that really is hurting our society would go away if we stopped interacting with it. You know, the View is a incredibly toxic TV show, and it's far worse than I think the late night shows, mainly because it's so much of it is just based on untruths and lies and an agenda and oh God, I hate to say it, but that woke white woman mentality, even though it's not all white women. But the point is, the only reason most of us ever see The View is because people share clips of it. Nobody watches it. It's just they watch it to get the clips. And so I think that we can be our own worst enemy because we're waiting around for somebody to say something stupid so we can share it in outrage. And if we didn't do that, these shows would go away because nobody watches them. So I think that's something to keep in mind when interacting on any platform, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or Facebook or whatever. If you want to see more of it, interact with it. If you want to see less of it, scroll by. Don't like it. Don't get upset and yell or, you know, type in all caps. Just scroll on by and interact with something that you want to see more of. I think that's probably the most important lesson any of us can learn. But we have this power to change our world. And it really is a lot about perception. And I think, you know, the more I watch Trump, the more I realize that's the framework that he kind of comes from. So he's what they used to call it, where he just sees it differently than everybody else. But it ends up working that way. And there's, you know, all of the biggest gurus, the self-help will tell you, you know, fake it till you make it. And I want to say, I can't think of their names off the top of my head, but you know, that in most self-help books, you know, if you want to get ahead, you have to envision what you are shooting for and keep your mindset there rather than where reality is, right? You can't change where you are unless you can visualize yourself in the place where you want to be, which I think is what Trump does. Which would make sense, right? He's in business. That's what they do. I used to work with a guy like that. He very much like Trump, incredibly successful, a great guy. I absolutely thought he was brilliant, but he was somebody who he demanded a lot from everybody around him. And, but oftentimes said some of the most bizarre stuff, but everything always worked out because he could envision it. And he didn't hang around in the negativity. He didn't care what people said about him. It was like he knew who he was and he was just going to go do his thing. And I think most successful people, especially in business, have that mentality. I think you have to, because you have to be thick-skinned. And so people try, and that's, you know, probably why you have so many people being so outrageously angry at him, is because the slings and arrows just don't seem to, they don't cut him. And I think you probably saw that with Charlie Kirk and a lot of the other people on the right who are finally beginning to speak up. You have to have a thick skin. And so the tables are turning. I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing. There's a lot of talk on, I think Megyn Kelly was talking about how she wanted to go scorched earth. You know, we can't, what did she say? You know, we can't negotiate with these people. They just killed Charlie, who was the one actually trying to have the dialogue. I don't like that. That worries me. I don't think scorched earth is necessarily, I don't think that's persuasive at all. I do think, you know, being more open-minded is, and willing to listen is probably the most important thing, but also stop interacting with the stuff that you don't want to see more of, because we're just manifesting the crap. We have to start manifesting the good stuff. And it's out there. It really, really is. There's so much good out there. You just have to pay attention to it and want to see it. I think so much of what we do on social media is, you know, again, because the algorithm is created that way, you know, we see the dark side of things, and we're conditioned to, and there's probably reason for that, right? It's survival. It's, you know, I have to know who's chasing me or who's after me. But we don't necessarily. So we have these things in our head called brains that we should be using more often than just that little lizard part of it that tells us, you know, fight or flight. So anyway, those are my thoughts for the day. I've also I've written something similar on my blog at Redhead Ranting. I am going to be on Jason DeRusha's drive tonight in about an hour, I guess. He's on WCCO in locally. It's not. I don't think it's national. You could probably stream it somewhere. I will put the link in on my blog post tomorrow if you're interested in listening. And then we're just going to be talking about my book. So if you haven't bought my book, now's a good time. Ginger Snapped. It's available at all of the online places, the normal places, Kindle, Apple, Amazon, that sort of thing. So have a happy Wednesday. Happy hump day. I will see you tomorrow.